This is Jim Inkster, and our guest is Max Clow. He's the Chief Program Officer at the New Politics Leadership Academy, a nonprofit dedicated to recruiting and developing alumni of long-term service programs, both military and civilian, to run for political office. Previously, Max served as Vice President of the Leadership Development at City Year, the Boston-based AmeriCorps program focused on addressing the nation's high school dropout crisis. Max received his doctorate from Harvard University, and his book is Race and Social Change, A Quest, A Study, A Call to Action. Good morning, Max Clow.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Recent events have turned a spotlight on the issue of race in modern America, and the current cultural climate calls for more research, education, dialogue, understanding. That's what your book is about. You've taken a tough topic, and what have you found?
Well, you know, I've been trying to understand for decades, really, just what is going on with race in this country. It's obviously an important issue and really divisive.
Well, it's something that is not unique to the South, is it?
No, it's the whole country. You know, and it's kind of foundational to our history. There's racial injustice and kind of a lack of understanding around this. Led me to stumble on a youth leadership program that runs this kind of exercise, this educational exercise that let me observe basically kind of a civil rights movement in a petri dish. They simulated this Jim Crow style social system, and then over the course of between breakfast and lunch, the participants kind of challenged these norms and transformed the system. So I had a chance to kind of study social change using rigor and social science. And it was powerful to see this as a whole system undergoing a transformational process.
You focus on some of the sites that are iconic in the civil rights struggle: Montgomery, Little Rock, Philadelphia, Mississippi. Do people who live there, do they really know what happened right in their midst?
That's fascinating. I did do a trip when I was, many years ago, I was a group leader for a cross-country trip for an organization called Operation Understanding DC that had 30 teenagers, 15 black, 15 of them were Jewish, and we did this tour through those sites. And, you know, there's a steady stream of kind of civil rights tourists who go visit those locations to learn about the history. It's kind of, I'm really not sure how deeply aware the people who live there are. I'm sure there's, of course, folks who really understand the history, but I also imagine there's folks who aren't so, haven't studied what went on in their backyard.
Well, in the summer of 2002, Max chanced upon a program he thought might offer some missing answers to questions about race and social change. What happened at that time?
That was when I stumbled on this educational exercise. And I was studying youth leadership and found this program called Camp Anytown, which has been around for 60 years and run all across the country. And Camp Anytown is a week-long residential youth leadership program for a very diverse group of high school students that spends a week studying isms like racism and sexism and homophobia and xenophobia and all of these things. And but there was an event on the last day that changed my life, and that was the participants wake up and gather in a circle for breakfast, as they did every day. But on that last day, the directors did something unexpected. They divided them up into groups: whites, Asians, Jews, Latinos, LGBTQ, blacks. And they said, don't talk to members of other groups and don't make eye contact with members of other groups. And then they went into breakfast, and the white kids went in first and had double servings and a big table, and every group lower in the hierarchy had less resources until the black kids were sitting on the floor with very little to eat. And they call it the separation exercise. It's clearly an attempt to simulate a hierarchical, segregated, Jim Crow-style social system. But the educational purpose is for the participants to challenge these systems. And between breakfast and lunch, these events unfolded that really looked like, in some real ways, the real-life civil rights movement. So I decided to watch three more of these, and just what can we learn by watching this kind of civil rights movement unfold multiple times in a petri dish.
The book is Race and Social Change, A Quest, A Study, A Call to Action. It's a provocative book, and you list some forerunners to what you believe may be issues of race in America, and these are not pleasant forerunners, and some would believe that maybe you've gone a bit too far, but tell us about it.
Yeah, this exercise that I just talked about extends a tradition of kind of classic social psychology studies. There's a Milgram experiment about obedience that took place at Yale in the 60s. The Stanford Prison Experiment was an experiment where they tried to simulate a prison in the basement of a academic building at Stanford that was supposed to run for 2 weeks. They had to stop it because they had divided groups into prisoners and guards, and the prisoners were really kind of in anguish, and the guards had gotten really aggressive and kind of cruel to the prisoners. So there's this. There's also a brown-eyed, blue-eyed experiment that was run by a teacher in the Midwest soon after Martin Luther King got assassinated, wanted to help her classroom of all-white students understand racism. So she divided them up by brown-eyed kids and blue-eyed kids and really treated one as superior and the other inferior. There's this long tradition of these classic and provocative and ethically, questionable exercises that I think illuminate the dark kind of dark corners of human behavior in ways that hopefully are empowering and give us some kind of higher consciousness to understand these dynamics. And this book and this exercise that I focus on really is a continuation of that tradition.
How far do we have to go to achieve social and racial justice in our country?
There's a lot more work to be done. We've also made a lot of progress, and part of this is viewing our history as kind of this long, there's American history, but it's also really a progress of human history all the way throughout time. And we've come a long way. We also have plenty of work yet to be done to really get to a place of reconciliation and equality and fairness. Part of what the book invites us to understand is we all just are born into the world at a particular moment in this process, and we get to choose how we respond and kind of take responsibility for our moment of being part of this developmental process.
You note, Max, that the torture of Iraqi prisoners by U.S. service members was a wake-up call. We like to think we're not capable of this kind of cruelty, but the evidence proves that we are.
Yeah, that was one of those that was really similar to what happened with the Stanford Prison Experiment. And it shows you the power of these total institutions to kind of warp human behavior and call forth the worst of us. And I will say, some people look at those things and say it's evidence that human beings are just terrible. And I do think that's the wrong lesson. The power of those exercises is the power of institutions to shift our behavior. And it suggests that we could potentially create different institutions that call forth very different behaviors from us. So I do think, important to see the rays of hope in this, because there is some dark lessons from a lot of those studies.
You only have a couple of mentions of the President of the United States in the book, Donald Trump. You do write that a compelling case can be made that collective hunger to regress backward toward a far more simple hierarchy is alive and well in the U.S. and is manifesting itself in the success of President Trump's presidential campaign.
Yeah, this came out right around the time of the campaign and the election. And part of, an idea that comes from the book is we're seeing this progress from a simple hierarchy that moves towards something ever more kind of interconnected and networked. And part of viewing this as a developmental process is it makes sense for things to take a couple steps forward and then take a step or two backwards. And it can be a way to read our current moment of history. We had this kind of progress moving towards something that was more equal and more interdependent. And then we're seeing this really strong backlash of just a desire to return to a simpler hierarchy where it was clear who was on top and who was, who wasn't. And everything was kind of simpler. And it feels like a regression to a time in the past.
Do we still have an aversion to uniting people of different nationalities, ethnicities? Is that still an issue as far as the natural trend to hang out with our own crowd?
Yeah, I definitely think we're in this moment. It's for everybody more comfortable. It's easier. And, I honor... try and bring a lot of compassion to this. I understand that. I feel it in my own life. It's a comfortable place to be with people who are similar to me. But I also feel like we're at this moment in history where we are called to understand ourselves as part of a whole country, a whole world. We are part of something larger than ourselves, and we need to begin thinking about our part in a whole system that goes beyond our comfortable group. And what does it mean to, you know, have our places where we can feel comfortable and reconnect to our own roots, but also recognize we need to be working across boundaries and understanding the whole in a way that we have not done so in the past.
The last part of your book is a call to action, and one of those calls is striving to access the potential of one's higher self. How is this accomplished?
Well, you know, part of what we find is it's easy and comfortable, to stay within one's social group. You know, we see this in this exercise where the participants found it easy to just stay with their group and not try and reach out across the boundaries. But those folks, they could sense there was something not right about this system. And the folks who choose to kind of honor that truth, that sense of calling that called them beyond just the comfort of staying with their group, were the ones who were able to step out and create this change. And I do think it required kind of moving beyond just living a life of quiet obedience and conformity to connecting with our highest ideals and trying to act on those highest ideals in the world.
It's a powerful study illuminating our nation's collective civic fault lines. The book is Race and Social Change, A Quest to Study, A Call to Action from Max Clow. We thank you, and we know your work will continue, and we look forward to a return engagement soon. Thank you, Max.
Thanks for having me.
Coming next, it'll be Mary Beth Lima, LSU professor. Her book is Adventures of a Louisiana Birder, 1 Year, 2 Wings, 300 Species. And today is the 4th day of June. It's the 26th birthday of Aaron Nola, the greatest pitcher in LSU history. He was 30-5 for the Tigers. Last year had a brilliant season for the Philadelphia Phillies, going 17-6, and won his first 6 decisions of this season. This is Talk Louisiana on WRKF.